What's going on, guys? Welcome back. We got a strong episode for you today as we break down Red Guardian, the newest tech card to hit Marvel Snap, landing in a spotlight cache with Lady Deathstrike and High Evo. Is he worth getting? We're going to break down our thoughts and star ratings. And speaking of Lady Deathstrike, we're going to break down the April content patch. Zabu died, Eliath is gone, Sandman is back, kind of. So we're going to break down our review on them. And then lastly, we're going to be talking about some data mine cards in the Eternals. We've got a sneak peek at some pretty crazy good cards coming out. So Alex and I are going to give our early impressions as always. We're going to talk about that all today, more in this episode of the Snapchat. And always, I'm joined by Mr. Alex Kocha. Hello, friend. Hello. Happy post-lunar eclipse, as you would say. Solar eclipse. Happy. What? We made it through. We're through the U.S. Agent week, and we're on to a brand new week of Marvel Snap, buddy. And it's looking a lot different than the last time we filmed. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. And yeah, the patch was massive. The sun and the moon were massive as well. Did you get a chance to see it at all? Or like, I know you were traveling, but did you get a chance to stare at the sun a little bit?
Where I was on the off Florida a little bit, they were like, all right, you guys have like 5 minutes. And like everybody bum rushed for the elevator. And I missed it. I didn't get to see. I just saw a lot of social media posts. Was it cool? Was it up to the hype?
So it was actually crazy. So where I was, it was completely cloud covered. It was so depressing. I was like, oh man, clouds everywhere. Why, right? And then like 3 minutes, 3 minutes before the eclipse was supposed to happen, it's like this break in the clouds. Like God himself just punched a hole for us. It just was a small break, just enough for us to see it in its full glory. It was absolutely awesome. It was really nice. And my kids were like, whoa, because then all of a sudden it went dark. The lights on our street turned on like it was the middle of the night. It was pretty cool. It was nice. The kids liked it. Our little ones didn't understand what was going on at all.
Yeah, my brother said it was like good. Screwed up the animals. Like the crickets started going and the birds stopped. And then they're like, oh, false alarm. It's that thing that happens every 7 years or whatever. But dude, that's awesome. Yeah, the cruise was fun. It is. I got burnt alive, man. I forgot I'm a YouTuber who doesn't see the sun. I'm essentially Dracula, the card. I'm just a variant. And I got cooked, man. I got cooked. I mean, absolutely fried, but it was a good time. It was a good time on the cruise, man.
I remember when I went to Disney last year and we were in Florida and it was like the sun was out. And like, listen, we're as Canadian as they come, man. Like I walked outside, I felt the sun on my body. I was like, this is dangerous. Like, this is not, I'm not built for this, man. And so like, it's funny because you're from California and you're like, you got toasted? Imagine what would have happened to me, man. I would have been a literal like burnt marshmallow.
Oh, dude, it was pretty rough. But overall, it was fun. There's a couple people. Dude, I decided, okay, at one point I'm like looking around for a towel and I'm like, this guy's got to know. And shout out to whoever you are. You know who you are. I was like, hey, buddy, do you know where the towels are? And he looks at me, he's like, cozy? And I'm like, you got to be on this cruise ship. You got to be kidding me. And then, you know, he watched the last Snapchat. It was great. He's like, it's a good week for you to travel because U.S. Agent's out. I'm like, exactly, man. What a horrible card. We'll be reviewing that on your side. But yeah, it was cool, man. From the cruise director to random people I met at the Bahamas. It's wild how many people play the game. I said that on a video I put out the other day. Just truly, you know, kind of puts things in perspective. I know me and you talked about it when we were at PAX East. Like, you know, it puts names and faces to the view count, you know?
Yeah, no, it definitely does. And when we bump into people at PAX East and just around, right? I remember I was at a festival and I was with my family, brought my kids to a festival near Toronto. And someone's like, Alex. And they came up and my wife's like, no way. My wife actually does not watch any of my content. I wonder if she even believes I release videos, honestly. Like she might think I'm just like fabricating so I can come down and like play Pokemon game. Or something. Yeah. But yeah, so like when it happens, it's like, it's incredible. And you're right. Like I think a lot of people, when they start to like be successful on YouTube and stuff, they start to lose touch of what each individual view does. And I never have. I've really, really focused on the fact that like each view is a human being interacting with our content. And it does mean a lot to us.
Yeah, for sure, man. Lastly, I'll end on this before we start on the Marvel Snapness. Best story from the cruise was I got stuck in an elevator, man. Moments within, stuck in an elevator. 25 people. Yeah, probably 25 is a lot. It felt like 25, probably more like 15, 20. Have you been stuck in an elevator before?
What a horrible question to ask me. No, but now you've cursed me. Now I'm going to be stuck in an elevator.
It was my first. I popped my cherry on going on this elevator and the panic. How people process stressful, like how do you think you would process that? Would you be an immediate freak out? Would you be like, kind of like, oh, it's going to be great. Like, how would you do that?
In that situation, I would have taken off my gamer glasses. Yeah, I just been like,
we're fine. It's over. It's done. Starlit. Yeah, no, it was funny to watch people because you have like the guy in the back that's like, let me out. And then you have another person like, don't press any buttons. And then the grandma's pressing all the buttons like on Elf, like the Christmas tree. And I'm just sitting here like, guys, we got to keep it together. Trying to be the leader of the bunch. Didn't work out. I got screamed at. And 10 minutes later, dude, they did the whole alarm thing. It was a fantastic way to set sail. But anyway, guys, Cruz, we could do a whole podcast on just Alex and I's stories. Maybe we will. But let's talk about Marvel Snap, bud. Let's get right to it. We got a lot to talk about today on this side of the Snapchat. What are we talking about on your side?
Cozy, we're going to be talking about U.S. Agent, talking about our 5-star ratings that we'll be giving it on. That's just a joke. U.S. Agent's awful. We'll be talking about U.S. Agent regardless. We'll also be talking about the top 10 best cards in Snap. Can't wait to have that discussion with you, Cozy. And then finally, of course, our Snapchat mailbag.
Well, man, we're going to just jump right into it. We have a lot to break down. I'm actually really looking forward to this episode because we've got just a lot of card talk, which I'm excited about. So Red Guardian, new card, all the changes in the patch, and then some of the stuff that came, some of the fluff with it. And then the most exciting future cards and the Eternal, some good card discussion. But let's go and start at the top, man. Let's talk about Red Guardian. And he's changed a little over time. But right now, if you don't know, he's a 3-cost card with 3 power. On reveal, he's going to afflict the lowest powered enemy card where you play him with -2 power. But he's going to remove that card's text. And I think this is quite an interesting card. And there's some mixed opinions out there. U.S. Agent, pretty unanimously, people hated it. Red Guardian, going to be a little bit more challenging to rank here. So I'll go ahead and hand it on over to you. Hit me with a star rating first off. I can do it too, whatever you want to go with. What do you feel?
Well, I'm confident in this one. Actually, that's not true. I'm not. I'm kidding. So I originally gave it a 3-star when we talked about it during the season preview, right? I've had some time to really reflect on it. And in my notes, I've actually written it as a 4-star now. Because I've kind of come around to the card. Mm-hmm. However, what happened was the nerf to Zabu, which we'll discuss in the patch, I think is a huge hit to Red Guardian's value proposition because I feel like Zabu was an excellent target for it.
Yeah.
So my heart of hearts says I actually think that we're probably sleeping on this card a little bit. But one of its primary candidates and targets in Zabu has been nerfed. And so does that take a little bit off of Red Guardian's power? Possibly. So I'm leaning in the 3.5 range.
Oh my God, he said it, guys. Put the confetti up. No, honestly, funny enough, 3.5 was around where I have. And I'm nervous about this one because I don't know what I did, Alex. I'm still trying to process. You just said 3.5. I could end the podcast here. What I'm excited about is and nervous about is I looked across all of the top decks right now, like the ones that people are playing. And I'm like, all right, which cards in these play lines would Red Guardian actually affect? Right? Like, which ones are these actually going to, you know, be helpful to turn off the text, put the minus power, and what archetypes is he best against? The thing is, there's a lot of cool names we're going to talk about. There's also a lot of inverse, like, not good cards that he does nothing, has no interaction with. My thing is, I think he could end up being semi-tough placing in a deck. It's a card that I'm not sold yet that we need, right? Like, does he solve anything massively? You know, we have something like Shadow King, and even he's underplayed, I still believe. But the guy's got a lot of potential, and he definitely could skyrocket as a good tech card. Not only that, he's coming out with High Evo and Lady Deathstrike. Lady Deathstrike's an awesome card now. High Evo has always been good. So you're not really gambling on a bad week either.
No, not at all. It's a great week, and I really like what they've done with LDS, and I'm actually happy. This is one of those few times where they buff the card in advance of the Spotlight Cash week, like well in advance.
Yeah.
So I think that was really cool by Second Dinner. If you could time that kind of stuff more often, great call, like in my opinion, right? Because, and now it gives people a chance to be like, oh, I'm actually excited about this Spotlight week. So you're right. You always want High Evo in your collection. And despite the fact that Red Hulk kind of eats its lunch, as we like to say. But Red Guardian, like the thing that I kept coming back to with it was the amount. So first of all, I've played so much like Surfer, for instance. I don't want to go right to Surfer because it's 3-cost, but okay. Rogue was one of my highest cube rate cards as Surfer. Like when I'm playing Surfer and I have Rogue, it's like nobody respects the fact that Rogue is a possibility in my deck. And I'm able to do so much damage with that card, that board flip. And so what I'm trying to say is that I think that tech cards are the cube stealers of Marvel Snap. Cards like Enchantress, Shang-Chi, okay, Rogue. These tech cards, the ones that you're able to play, even ones like specifically like Rogue, which are not expected the way Shang-Chi will, they can be the cube stealers of Snap. So I wonder if Red Guardian ultimately becomes a cube stealer.
Oh, he will be. That will be a big role of his. I think he will, you know, you're going to be, it's going to be obvious when to play him and kind of when to snap, right? In some terms or sense of the word. The thing that can be tough is like, we've said this about a couple cards, like, oh, he's going to be good in Conquest, right? Like he's going to be good in Conquest. you know, and that's where I go back. And I'm like, I wish Conquest kind of offered more sometimes, because it's like really solid game mode and fundamentals. And cards like this shine there a bit better. Yes, I see him being placed into Serra decks and things like that. And just as a tech card, is going to catch people by surprise. And let's go like good, bad, and ugly and talk about first kind of the good of Red Guardian here. And to start with the good, I kind of looked at those decks, as I said, and I'm going to list off some of these names, right? Some of these cards that if he can shut down, it's going to be awesome. Keep in mind, it's the lowest power card. So some of the ones I'll list off could be tough to hit off, but if he does, it's going to work out. Now, the obvious ones, obviously Angela, we know that one's going to be great. Being able to play it right after she's played is going to all but prevent, you know, her getting her boost up. I like that. Jeff, Sunspot, I think those are great cards just to neutralize the Jeff play. How many people don't move it right away? Easy way to just shut that down. Black Knight, if you can get this off before they get that blade pop off and you get a little priority on there by turn three, it's got to be one of the best counters to that. So definitely, I think that's not, you know, awful. Ebony Blade with Black Knight is played a ton in a solo lane. Another way just to kind of finally cut that card down a little bit and at least turn the text off. But Alex, mostly, I think Destroy, man. I think this is a great card to counter X23 Deadpool if you do that soon enough. And it's not just turn the text off. You kill those cards, right? They will straight up die if they eat them up with a Carnage and you play it upright. That's where I think he's going to shine. And I've got more names, but is there any that jump to you off that list?
Well, yeah, actually, like the Carnage Deadpool type of situation, 100%. Like, yep. They have Deadpool sitting in a lane, you know they're going to play Deathlock or whatever, and you take the text off, and yeah, that's detrimental to them, absolutely. And I think that, like, you can snap in that situation, right? Oh, yeah. And even with Black Knight, like, if you have initiative and you know that they're going to play Lady Sif or whatever, like, having Red Guardian come out first, oh, you just discarded your Infinaut, lol. Well, they might have Hela, but that's a whole other conversation, I guess, right? One of the ones that really stuck out for me for Red Guardian, I think it could be problematic for something like Patriot. Patriot obviously sitting at one power, even if you play Mystique with the Patriot, Mystique sitting at zero. So I think that it can definitely impact Patriot negatively, but, like, another card is Nebula. Nebula can be, like, pretty annoying. And I still think it is one of the most slept on cards in Snap. Like, in terms of, like, the appreciation for what it truly does, Nebula is remarkable. And being able to just turn it off, I mean, that's probably a card they were expecting power from.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, man. And not to mention, let's just say this, he's essentially a 3-5. You got the negative 2 push on there, so that's kind of nice. And when I was thinking of the negative power, I was actually thinking how fun this will be. You know, you got those hazmat surfer decks that go crazy. You'll have to try to find out a way to do it correctly. But the idea of this guy shutting off Luke Cage's text on an opponent that has a hazmat deck and you just flip that immediately is something that could be a ton of fun. Like, he offers, like, in short, and we'll get to the bad and the ugly, he's great against ongoing, right? He's a great another solution. Zabu just got nerfed. Enchantress is even more kind of gone than, you know, she was already before, said that. But then he's also this kind of cool card to counter Dracula for discard. Straight up kills it. Dead. We've talked about Iron Man. You know, obviously, clearly, that's a huge one he can turn off for Tribunal. Things like Hope Summers. These cards that have that reactive over and over way to just produce results. So is that enough? We'll have to see. But I do think it's going to steal some cubes. And at the very minimum, he'll be a good, like, 2-cube stealer, if you will.
Yeah, like, it's hard to, like, 8-cube somebody with a Red Guardian, right? Yeah. That's what makes Shang-Chi so good, is they're like, oh, look at this, you know, Red Hulk that I'm dropping. And like, boom, right? Like, that's what the cubes come from, right? But one thing I will say, though, is, like, Red Guardian, it feels like it can hit way more. Like, Rogue has that limited, like, potential where it's like, well, they're not playing ongoing, and I have this Rogue in my hand. What do I do, right? What do I do? Red Guardian feels like almost every single deck has a good target. And here's a good example as well. Now, it's kind of fallen off in popularity, but forever, something like a Collector was hard to deal with.
Yeah.
You really could only deal with it with something like a Shadow King. But now, Red Guardian targets it. Like, that text, which is, like, not an ongoing and not, you know, kind of like what Dracula had exactly, right? Collector can be negatively impacted now by Red Guardian. I think it is, like, way more flexible than something like a Rogue would be.
One, yeah, to your point, right? It's like Rogue, great, Morbius. But then Red Guardian can kill the Morbius too. And what discard has so good around it is what? It builds up power late. And so, like, those cards like Morbius, you're like, oh, he's going to win that lane. So, you know, you can shut that down ahead of time. Also, though, where you can steal the 8-cubes, there are plenty of examples that cards are played in their own lane. Devil Dinosaur, whatever. We can name a couple off the top of our heads. Boom. He kills it. He can just kill a card played in its own lane, annul Fantastic. Now, that won't always work. Blob doesn't give a rip, right? He's going to soak it up. He has his power. It's too late at that point. But there are going to be examples, especially in the five cost area, where he can shut them down. And honestly, I think the dynamic duo might be him and Shadow King, right? Think about those two together against Destroy. It's done. I mean, you've got a way to handle a good chunk of what that deck wants to do.
No, absolutely. And it's just what I keep coming back to with Red Guardian. The reason why I was willing to kind of like up my rating slightly was I feel like it's going to have many fewer games where it feels like a dead draw. I feel like even on three on curve, it's going to be a confident play because there's probably something you want to hit. And while it's a card that could benefit from being held later in the game, so like for instance, like US Agent, you could theoretically line it up better later in the game. But Red Guardian, the later you wait, it's entirely possible that they're able to like circumvent your Red Guardian play. Similar like how with Rogue, if they play Armor into the lane with Morbius, then now you got a 50-50 the Rogue play. Yeah. Whereas with Red Guardian, if there's one thing there, there's one thing there.
Yeah, and to be fair, you know, I do like 2 and 3 as the sweet spots for tech cards. People are finally coming around to her. I think Supergiant's still a pretty good card, but Supergiant was tough on release week because it's 4-drop. It could be tough, and then you're like, well, what do I do on 5? It could be a bit awkward. To your point, Red Guardian, get out a little bit quicker. You brought it up briefly. Yeah, Surfer's going to love this card. You know, obviously, you could do Abs Man, too. Just go right after that. Killmonger can get rid of targets, you know, pretty quickly, and then you can then use him as well. So I like, you know, the possibility for that in Sarah decks and whatnot. Even Lady Deathstrike killing a bunch of cards on a lane. And then you know, maybe play Red Guardian against, you know, the Captain Marvel. Something like that to shut that card down. Then it's just a bad stat card. But the bad is there are also so many decks, they don't care. On Reveal does not care about Red Guardian for the most part. Vision, good luck trying to, you know, pin him down. You know, you can look at things like obviously whatever, Dr. Doom, other ones, Shuri. You can cut the text on Shuri, but it's already used that, you know, effect. Taskmaster doesn't care. So to that point, there are some decks that just don't care about Red Guardian, which I do think is fine though.
Yeah, they won't care, but you're still negative to the card that gets hit, right? So it's going to get its power, but the text part of it won't be impacted on many of the on reveal cards. So that is definitely notable, but on average, though, I feel like on curve, it's much more playable than something like, I keep going back to Rogue as a good example, but I do think it's playable on curve where I think that's great. Like, I feel like it's difficult to hold low cost cards later into the game. Like, I feel like a Hazmat, right? Like, you don't play Hazmat on curve generally. You want to hold that card later. There are cards like that in Snap, but most of the ones that you really want to play in the decks that are the most consistent are the ones you play confidently on curve. And a good example of a change was like, for instance, when they changed Time Stone being changed to make the next card negative one, it just made it much more comfortable to play it on one or play it on two. The card wasn't as powerful, so to speak, but it made playing it much easier. And now the change to Time Stone just sucks. But anyways, the idea of being able to play on curve, though, I think is an important consideration.
100%. And it's not going to feel weird or bad to play a good chunk of the time, whereas some tech cards have fallen into that line. We've seen it before. Shadow King had 20 buffs, so it made it something of use. I think it's cool, too. If you can snipe them out of doing things, like if you know they're going to play Pro X in a lane, how cool is it that this guy is one of the few cards that can pop up later, turn back off. Doesn't matter. 5-1, you love to see it. Wong, I got to tell you, it's not that it felt bad playing Enchantress on a Wong back in, you know, in the day when that was the main way to handle it. But, you know, typically you wanted to do something or save that just in case there's any other ongoings in that lane. This is a bit of an easier way to handle that. Miss Marvel's only 4-4. That's not a hard power to get up to. Shutting her down is massive. So I think on curve is great, just playing around three or playing him on three after the two costs to get the big effect. But also there is some, as all decks, if you know what they're going to be playing, holding on to them could end up being pretty legit. And that's where I like him in Surfer, obviously, things like that. So that'll be fun, man. He's going to be an interesting card to test out.
Yeah, and like even something like a Quinjet, which we have not really talked about. Quinjet in Loki and in other decks, we don't quite have a shield archetype yet. We should, but it's just not quite strong enough. But like Quinjet, that's a huge power like play. Like they have Quinjet on the board, they're playing Loki on 4, and on 3 you just turn it off for -2 power. That's huge, right? That's huge. And that can be a massive gameplay swing where you can even snap on that. So I do think the card has significant potential. And what kind of gives me some excitement about it is I feel like you can confidently put it on 3 most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So it'll be fun. I think we're going to be, I don't think it's going to be just a terrible card by any sense. And there's a couple dials. We got to love cards that have those dials that we can mess with. And in this case, you got the negative two and you've got just his base, you know, amount of power. So if he does kind of underwhelm, there's a lot of room here to kind of improve him, if you will, man. So we'll have to see how he does. Again, high Evo. My recommendation, guys, is if you don't have high Evo, you know, it's definitely a card you want to add to your collection. Lady Deathstrike is definitely not bad, and there's some great decks with her in it. So you can go ahead and give it a shot. If not, and if you have a full collection, I would probably wait and see a little bit. But other than that, not too bad.
You never lose by waiting and seeing. It's the best play for new cards.
That's for sure, bud. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the April patch. And I was gone. I was at sea, and it got delayed. Yeah, so we had to wait a little bit longer. We had a full, beautiful day with just U.S. Agent. So glad that we had that. You know, we didn't need any distractions from that Mona Lisa of a card. But let's talk about the patch, bro. Were you prepared for bro, last I look back at these young men who knew nothing last Snapchat, like everything's great, and all of a sudden they slay Zabu, they Mufasa Zabu massively, and then the purple cloud got a little bit dumped on too. As we were talking about the villains last week, what are your impressions? Let's start with Zabu.
First of all, with Zabu, I gotta tell you, very surprised by this change. Very surprised. To me, it reads like a timeout. Like, hey, Zabu is a little too popular right now. Let's give it a timeout. We're going to bring it back maybe eventually. It's one of those changes that they want to just shake up the meta a little bit. And I respect it. It surprised me, though, that they did it the week before Red Guardian comes out, because Red Guardian is like specifically designed to destroy Zabu. And so it's like, what are we doing? Like, why not just give Zabu, like, wait to see if Red Guardian does something to Zabu. Then if it doesn't, then maybe neuter him the next patch or whatever. I was kind of surprised because, like, it makes Red Guardian better if Zabu's better.
Yeah, and then the other thing is, like, I feel like so many cards, it reminded me of Loki, where, like, all these cards took the hit because of Loki's sins. And, like, you know, Darkhawk clearly is a prime example. Rock Slide. I mean, we had all these four-cost cards that had something happen to them. And then, like, okay, we're done with Zabu now. And I get where they're coming from in the sense of, like, the design landscape is got to be a bitch, right? Like, it's got to be tough to figure out, okay, what do we do with four costs? Because they can be Zabu'd and everyone's just going to play Zabu. I don't know, though, man. It just felt like a change that either should have happened way earlier, because it's not like he was just, you know, dominating the rooftops. But I got to say, he has been, I made the joke on my OTA video that if you haven't seen the MCU, you would think Zabu is like one of the most important characters with how relevant he is in Snap.
It's actually hilarious to think that some of the best cards in Snap, I have no idea where they come from. Like Zabu, Sarah, like these cards. I'm like, who were Zabu actually low key? I did see, because I feel like I bring it up like once every, at least a couple times a month. He's in the animated series for X-Men, like the original, like second season when they go to the Savage Land and Kazar, like, yeah, with Sauron, like kind of muting all their powers and Professor X is like, I can walk. Right? Like, you know what I mean? Kind of interesting stuff, right? But Zabu's there. And I'm like, oh, I think that's Zabu. But anyways, it is kind of funny to think that, you know, it's had its ups and downs, though. Like, for a while, it was actually kind of on the downturn. Like, it's kind of funny how, like, this patch lines up with, well, they lock it in, like, a month in advance. But I actually think he was on the downturn. I don't think he was as popular as he once was.
And it wasn't even just, like, four-cost cards. It was also, like, mid-range decks that they, like, worked on other cards because Zabu was in there as that certified two-play. And it's also weird that, like, not that Ravonna is in the same, you know, boat, but if we keep getting these cards under a certain power threshold, Ravonna's going to be there too. And it's like, okay, that do people have to be afraid of that? So I don't know. I wasn't thrilled. I wasn't like rioting. I said I didn't agree with it. I didn't love it. But let's talk about Aliath, man. What did you, we kind of crowned him the villain of Snap last week before he died. Now he's at to a 6-8 here. Do you feel like they nailed this?
You know what's funny is, if you can remember, I actually said, I don't think this is Aliath's final form. Do you remember me saying that on Snapchat?
I do.
And now look at this. It gets patched, and we actually had no idea of this change in advance. And so, like, it's kind of funny how intuition works. Early stats, I mean, we use untapped-based stats, and obviously, like, the hardcores are using untapped generally. His win rate has not been negatively impacted. His play rate's gone down, but his win rate's still solid. Like, he's still a good card. The 6-8 power is significant. That's a 6-power, like, buff. Like, that is not nothing, right? And removing the text off of played cards, if you have initiative and you play against a Silver Surfer, like three cards or two cards or whatever they're playing, that's huge. Like, there's a lot of cards that need their text to go off. Yeah. So generally speaking, I think it's an awkward change. I don't like it. It's like, it's like not it's weird. It's just, it's not like, it's not intuitive is what I would say. It's not intuitive. And that for that reason, I don't like it, but I understand and appreciate they're trying to do something with the card.
Or flavor filled, really. Like, Eliath is legit a freaking good cloud of death right now. It's like, nah, I just kidding. We're not going to kill you. We're just going to, like, we're going to hurt you a little bit. I do like, however, like, the big cards, though, in Snap, don't care. Like, I think that's kind of fun. And, like, Magneto's just like, cool, man. I'm still going to power stat you. You know what I mean? Like, I do like that effect to it. Speaking of, though, man, Red Guardian's a 3-5, technically. This is a 6-8, and arguably, it's unrevealed. So, not that it's harder. But if you look at it in that vein, it's kind of interesting because they both remove text in a sense. Kind of interesting. Red Guardian, if you look at it in that case, looks really good in some sense of the word. But yeah, I don't know. I think I'm fine with this because it still works in a lot of the ways that you want it to. You know, it could kill Hela and whatnot if you read it correctly.
I think it's the priority part of just deleting cards that was frustrating people. I'm not sure how I feel about this. Like, Eliath's been a very complicated card because I like the idea of making initiative matter. Dodging initiative so that you can play Shang-Chi with confidence is important. Having initiative so you can play Eliath is important. But it's uninteractive, and it wasn't necessarily healthy for the game. So I'm not a game designer. Surprise, surprise. So I'm not actually sure what I would have done with Eliath. But I know it wasn't quite right. Yeah. I'm not sure if this lands either.
It's been a cool week though that Zabu and the double, you know, Shung and another four drop, and now Eliath on 6 is gone. Like, it's weird, right? It's just a different Snap. Now we have other beasts or cards that have taken the spot of those. But yeah, definitely I think shocked a lot of people. I don't know if players were expecting this as much. We also had 3 different buffs, and all 3 of them have immediately brought them up in play rate and decks. Like, I can't remember the last time it was just like a winner, winner, and winner. But we start with Strong Guy, and you know what, man? I think they nailed it, right? Like, you've got now a card that they didn't have to do much, but just adding that one extra, just a little bit of forgiveness is pretty cool.
It is good. And key is that it works with Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Like, that is what it really does. It works with Apocalypse, and it's playable. It's absolutely playable. I don't know if it makes the best version of discard right now because discard's just too good. Yeah. But if discard ever gets like nerfed a bit or some pieces to it get changed, then Strong Guy can step in.
Yeah.
I think I really like this change a lot. And in theory, you can play this in other archetypes, but it's a little sloppier. Like, I was trying to play a discard surfer deck where I actually ran Proxima Midnight. So I'd play Gambit, discard my Proxima, so it came down as a 7 power on the turn while I destroy a card with Gambit, run Silver Surfer and Strong Guy goes up to 9 power. I get the 7 power from Proxima and I destroy a card with Gambit. It was actually pretty awesome, but really finicky to pull off. Yeah. Kind of difficult to get all the parts to kind of go together. However, Strong Guy felt playable. And when you had that 9 power, it felt good. So I think I like where the card is. Some additional experimentation. We'll see if it has the legs to really be a meta player. But if Strong Guy's not a meta deciding card, that's okay. But at least it feels playable now.
Yeah, it's kind of like Sabretooth in the sense of like it can be played in versions of the deck. Is it the most, you know, elite of it? You know, time will tell. With that though, we had 2-5 costs get adjusted. And let's start with Lady Deathstrike, right? So Lady Deathstrike, I think I got a lot of comments like, oh man, what a useless ability. We're actually gonna be talking about some cards here that are power related. And dude, I think they, you know what? I love the honesty that they put in the little paragraph where they're like, we had this idea of like building up this kind of scary card that could then eat everything. It just, in practice, it just didn't work. She had like a couple days in the sun, but in practice, you just had to commit too much. And then your opponent's just putting out blobs and magnetos. Like, what are you going to, you know, the Lady Deathstrike's not going to be big enough, fast enough. What do you think of the 5-7 change?
I like it. I think this change makes a lot of sense. There was 2 avenues they could have taken. They could have buffed it so that the power that was being applied only destroyed the enemy side. So then suddenly you could do something like an Okoye, Nakia style deck and like Forge and really try to play on top of things, but then wipe out their side of the board. Potentially overpowered. The other sides do exactly this, have the effect mirrored, but have it benefit you. So something like a Bucky Barnes, for instance, in Destroy will get destroyed and generate value for Lady Deathstrike while still giving you the chance to destroy enemy cards. the seven power's not insignificant, right? If you think about like a vanilla abomination, you're about a 5-9 vanilla. So it's two off of vanilla with the opportunity to potentially have power for you and negatively impact them. I like it, but is it good enough to really shake things up? I think there's going to be people that lose 8 cubes to it.
She's better, not best, right? She's better. She's definitely better and playable more. You're going to see her more. I think you're going to have more games like, Lady Deathstrike. And obviously there's a couple decks that have really shined, right? Our sleeper of last week, Annihilus. However, what I do like, you point out the 5-7, you got the Sandman we're about to talk about. What I like is, outside of Leech when he just nuked their entire hand the next turn, it's just tough to play a 5 cost with low, low power unless there's significant impact, right? Like, Sarah is fine because you're going to make that impact on turn 6. There's not a ton of cards, though, where you're comfortable. And Iron Man doubles the freaking location's power. Taskmaster can copy, not a big deal. So the problem is, unless it does something massive, you need the power stat. And that's where I feel like Sandman and Lady Deathstrike really benefited, because now you can play these cards and feel more confident. And immediately, I thought I was going to get crap for this whenever I was on the cruise. I thought I liked this Sandman nearly better. It's different. It's definitely different than what it was. And it's not played, the deck is not a Sandman deck, rather than just him being this opportunity tech card, and I actually like the fit.
I think it's way better. Yep. I think it's way better than it was before.
Yep.
Because you can snap into turn 5 Sandman.
Yep.
Because you can play decks that don't look like Sandman decks.
Yep.
And then if they're playing Bounce or Sarah or something, you snap. Yep. Like if you see Surfer and you know they're going to try and play Sarah, you snap. If you see that they're bouncing with Kitty Pryde, you snap on turn 5 and drop Sandman. That's how you steal cubes. I really like this. I think it's way stronger than it was before.
Yes. And it's funny because I think the initial, at least from the comments that I was getting, I was like, people have just got to get their hands on it to really realize that it kind of replaced Goliath in some sense, right? Because you're not killing all these cards, but you are limiting them huge. And people, if Sandman, I don't know about you, I wasn't making content all the time on Sandman, even though we could have in some metas, because he's just a frustrating card to have run rampant in the meta, if you will. Now, it doesn't feel scummy to play him. It's like, checkmate. That was a really good play. I had a big, turn 6 combo deck ready to go, and you stopped me. And 7 power finally gives you that cushion as a Sandman player to feel a bit more confident.
No, there's no question about it. And I think the key component of it is that you can play a regular game of Marvel Snap and use it as a turn 5 tech card. You know what I mean? And you don't have to play it. And even if you don't have a better play, it's still 7 power, right? You're 2 off of vanilla stat lines for 5, which sucks, but it's a small price to pay when you're able to play a card that really crushes their ability. And I'm sure if you're playing Sandman, your deck is designed to take advantage of it, right? Yeah. You got the Dooms, you got the Magnetos, you got the Leaders or the Red Hulks or whatever, right? You have something if you're playing Sandman, and maybe they don't. Maybe they're not prepared for that. That's not what their deck is built for. So I do like the card a lot. Is it going to be OP though? I when I was reading the text originally, I'm like, there's going to be a deck out there that comes out eventually this is going to rock in and it's going to piss people off.
Oh, for sure, man. I think, listen, there's a lot of change this week, but some of it was for the better. We're going to have to see how. I don't mind when they say it's a temporary change, like in Zabu, they kept saying that. I just want to make sure it is, right? Like, if you're going to say that, you got to kind of back it up a bit. And I get that things change, but I might be wrong, but I know we've heard before, like, this might be temporary. And then that's just kind of what the card is at this point. What about the other features that came out, man? The emotes, the $30 PNGs. How do we feel?
Very expensive. Was kind of disappointed with that. But then again, we were crying for reasons to spend gold. So we, it's like, be careful what you wish for situation to some degree. But I mean, I did buy one.
Which one?
It was the beast, you have to, right? But I don't know if I'm ever going to use it because I don't want to be toxic, but it is a fantastic emote. I did buy that one because I'm an idiot. Outside of that though, like I was very sad when I read the line that you can now select the combination of split and apply it to any variant. I was like, I want to do that. That's perfect. And I went to go do it. And I'm like, why isn't it working? It's not working like it's supposed to. And then they're like, yo, about that. That wasn't supposed to be in this patch note. I'm like,
no. Dude, I was in the middle of the Caribbean and I'm like, couldn't tell people. I'm like, guys, there's nothing I could do at this point. Yeah, I felt bad because I was pumped. I was pumped about that coming out. And at least it's like, I can still be excited that it is coming out. Definitely. I thought it was going to take longer to get that, no question. For the emotes, the one thing I wanted to state there is kind of the reasoning behind having it be, I guess, so expensive. And I kind of want to open this up more to debate. It's not that I have like one view or the other, but I also want to just talk about the reasoning behind it. Album completions, right, have emotes. And so they want to keep emotes as something to be like really proud of, and they're hard to get because of that. So then thus they kind of artificially like they've made these pricings because of that. However, I don't know, because if you have a rare emote from an album, that's still really cool. I think that's still like super unique that these, you know, that if you use an emote, I don't know if people would be pissed, because it's like anything, right? Like if a skin's in a game, you're like, oh yeah, that's like the cheaper skin or whatever. I've seen that around, whatever. Or, ooh, that one's kind of hard to get. That's a cool one. I don't see that often. I don't think that needs to set the value of the market for them.
I totally get that. There's a couple things that kind of I kept going back to. Is the idea is like, first of all, you can mute enemy emotes, so yeah, you don't have to even see them, right? That's a key thing. And this is when you talk about like cosmetics, this is as pure cosmetic as it gets, right? So yeah, like if they're going to charge a little bit of an extra price, like, I mean, is it somewhat disappointing because you want a beast, right? You want to do it, right? But it's expensive. I totally get it. And this is coming from someone who I've not completed a single album. Mm. I don't have a single additional emote because I don't buy lots of variants. Yeah, just don't. The last variant I bought was the Wolverine laying in the bed picture one.
Oh, it's a good one.
That was the last one I bought. And that was like the first variant in like months that I bought.
Yeah, I've slowed down on my variant purchases. I get the bundles. Like I got the Dazzler. I did not get that one. But there's... In general, I feel like we're going the right direction with some of this stuff. Well, that brings us to our next subject, buddy. And we are actually both really looking at these for the first time. We only do this every so now and then, but we want to look at cards way in advance. This is not next month. It's a couple months down the road because cards change and it's cool to see them in their first iteration. And so we're going to be talking about the Eternals season coming to the game. And we definitely have, as I loaded up the PNGs, they look fun. They look super fun. So Alex and I are going to kind of give our early impressions here. And to my understanding, Gilgamesh is going to be the season pass card. And we've got a lot to talk about. So we're going to go ahead and just jump right in. Have you seen the Eternals, Alex?
So a couple things about that. First of all, I did watch the movie a while ago.
Oh.
And I actually didn't mind it. It was like it kind of felt like a marathon, like a very slow burn, but worth it when you finish it. You're like, okay, all right. I thought it was well written. Very slow though. Very slow. I thought it was beautiful looking. I thought it was like, it captivated my attention, but I think I watched it over 3 days. So I was like, there was moments like, man, but I'm reading the comics, which is pretty cool. Comics are pretty neat. And I like, they're written by Neil Gaiman, I believe the name is. I don't quite sure the pronunciation, but obviously a famed author. And I think that they're pretty cool. I'm almost done the comics.
The cool thing that the comics do that the movie couldn't do is there's so many characters. And when you have a movie with so many characters that are being introduced, it's just tough to land it. It's tough because there's so much going on, and to make people care about the character, and if they die and whatever, it's a tough assignment. I think Ben Brode, in my interview with him way back when, almost a year ago now, said Eternals was his favorite Marvel movie. I was kind of shocked. I don't know if I put it there, but I definitely thought it was better than people maybe made it out to be. But yeah, Gilgamesh here is a 5-cost, 2-power card. On reveal, +2 power to him for each of your other cards in play with increased power. And this one's interesting. When I first read it, I was kind of like, oh, this is not that great. Yeah, I kind of like it. I think it's kind of cool. I think there's a couple instances here. It could definitely pop off on turn 6.
It's definitely cool, but like I was trying to think, and I'm not sure if like something like a Blue Marvel counts as increased power. Probably not, right? Because that's an ongoing effect. So it'd have to be like a permanently statted thing that like a Shadow King would impact. Because in theory, if Blue Marvel can buff this, then you can have like a Zoo deck where you play like a Squirrel Girl and Gilgamesh on turn 5 or turn 6 or something, right? And it can pop off pretty hard.
I feel like it won't because of Shaw. Like Shaw, I'm trying to go off of like Sebastian Shaw and how he gains power, but it's permanent power is what that says. This is increased power. So maybe it is Blue Marvel. And if that's the case, this guy could be awesome. He definitely has some really, talk about flexibility. Like Blue Marvel's in everything, you know? So you could just pop that off. Not to mention he's on reveal, so you can double trigger this thing on a Wong or something to, you know, I don't know, get him to stupid degree, then Taskmaster that. Yeah, I like that. What about I was thinking about Mr. Negative because he's a 2-power. And then those cards are technically increased too, no?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, Mr. Negative. That's right, because those cards would technically, they're inverted, but the power is going to be increased because they still work with something like a Shadow King or even a Mobius and Mobius, right? So the power and the energy do switch and they do count as like buffs and increases. You're right. That's a good call, dude.
So then he would be a 2-5 at the starting point with +2, and you probably have other cards. I think that's where it's like, whoa, that could be kind of crazy, especially if you play with a Jayne, right? And then you do like all those zeros coming out, right? All the power, and he's the last play.
Gilgamesh into Arnim Zola.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Hey, dude, that could be kind of crazy. I think that's kind of cool. Outside of that, funny enough, I've learned not to be like too overexcited about these like increased power cards, right? Lady Deathstrike just got reverted because of it. Shaw was a disappointment. They're just tougher to make happen. It's a tough thing to rely on the right things to trigger it. But obviously you could do the Nova, you know, the whole Nova thing can spread power across, like if Blue Marvel doesn't work, that at least does across the board pretty heavily.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe this is a Surfer card. Because he's 5, opposed to Sarah, you've got a lot of cards. Wolfsbane, Ironheart. I'm trying to think of these other ones that can build, obviously, Surfer. They just build up that power pretty easy.
Or maybe you play Surfer early.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. Kind of seems like a cool card, though. We'll have to see if the Blue Marvel thing works with him in general. Because, again, it's not permanent power. It's increased. So we'll come back to Gilgamesh, but he definitely seems fun. I don't know if they'll change him. I think that might be a decent stat line. Kind of reminds me of Firestar, RIP.
Yeah, I know.
A little bit.
What if you play Brood, Absorbing Man, Surfer, and something else on 5, and then Gilgamesh comes down as a 6? He should be absolutely massive.
He should be massive. Right? Kind of in that Patriot deck I play a lot of. That might be a disgusting deck. Alongside, you could do like Mockingbird potentially with that because there's so many cards out there. But let's move on. We're going to go to Athena, which is a 2-cost, 1-power card. This is a cool looking base card too here. After each turn, listeners, +3 power if you played exactly 2 cards. Hold on, what? After each turn, +3 power to Athena if you played exactly 2 cards. It's like the Abbey, but in a card. Hold on here. That doesn't seem too bad. That seems like she could be a 2-7 kind of confidently, yeah?
Seems like a Thanos card.
Oh boy. Okay, let's think here. I feel like a lot of decks, a good amount of decks, actually, you play 2 cards. I mean, there are some that you play. I feel like I probably tend to play more 1-card decks per turn, but there are plenty where you do play 2. So it's
Kitty +1, right?
Kitty Pryde's going to be disgusting with this card. Actually, I think that's, honestly, she kind of just feels like she'll slot right into the silky smooth Angela style of play.
Yeah, for sure. Because if you think about it, you play Angela on turn 2, and then Athena, and then Kitty Pryde on turn 3, right? And that actually should proc it, right? Because she should count as exactly 2 cards played, right? So if you play her in combination with someone, she should automatically be a 2-4, which is good. That's a premium stat line. That's a Colleen Wing stat line, right? Yep. And then you can do like, you know, Kitty Pryde plus Jeff next turn on top of the Angela, and that's, she gains +2, +3 again, right? So I think there's a lot going on there.
I actually really like this card now that I think about it, just because you're able to have a really good, it's kind of just, it's like an Angela. It's just like an Angela that's played differently. And so I think that's really unique. And it also goes with that Ravonna. She's a 2-1. So you could, you know, get these discounts going on. You could get Athena down there because she'd go down to a 1-1. Those are the main ones. Magic, clearly, you know, extra turns. It never feels bad. I don't know. Kind of feels pretty cool. I don't, what do you think, like star-wise, would you give her?
Oh, star-wise, she looks definitely like a 4-star card, but if the comics and movies have taught me anything, don't marry her.
Yeah, exactly. Good. Without, why not, Alex? Tell the listeners.
I don't want to spoil anything.
Okay, I was going to say.
Let's just say it's you got your hands full.
All right. Next up, we have, is it Makari? I believe, and it is 3-cost, 3-power card here. Hold on. After the turn, what? Hold on. After the turn runs from your hand to a random location. This is just in Baku, but a 3... What am I looking at here? After the turn runs from your hand.
The language is very funny. The language is trying to capture the character because it runs really fast, right? Makari is like a speedster. It's the Sonic the Hedgehog of the Eternal.
Yeah, so a 3-3. I don't think this is going to be its final state. I don't know. This seems kind of garbo to me. Maybe
Surfer. Really? I think it looks good.
It's okay. Where do you see it in practical use?
The only challenge, though, is that like it sounds like it goes to your hand and then gets played out immediately after the end of the turn, right? So in theory, if you have it in your hand and you play like a Nakia, it'll get buffed and then jump out onto the board, right?
Okay. I mean, we can hit our Moon Girl quota to double up decks. You get 2 of these, and they can both. We have to get out there. They can both run out. Troll. any control decks like this. What about like a strong guy, Silver Surfer kind of stuff going on, right? You got a three strong guy, wants no cards in the thing. This just runs right out. And then you can do like a bomb, play all your other three costs, and then she just runs out and does her own thing. I don't know.
That's a pretty cool idea.
Okay.
There's also it's going to run out on turn one and land on Bar with No Name.
The random location, yeah, that scares me. I don't think I love this card, though. I don't know if this is going to be a great card. I think this is like a 2-star at first to me. What do you give it?
I feel 3-star range, but okay. It's definitely, I think 3-4 is going to be better. 3-4 feels fairer to me.
Okay.
Unless, of course, there's a synergy we're not thinking about here, but...
After the turn,
it's cool. Yeah. It's at least cool. It's what M'Baku should be, really, except at the end of the game. M'Baku should be a 1/2 that at the end of the game jumps in a random location from your hand. Dude, that's this text on M'Baku with some minor modifications we're talking.
Maybe, dude, I bet you with the OTA, Angel and M'Baku both get that effect because they have it coded in the game now. It's a lot easier for them to, you know, rip it from the
100%,
hand.
100%. That'd be great.
I hope so, man, because this just takes a dump on M'Baku. Cool. Okay, next up we have Cersei. Yeah, thank you for that. I almost choked saying it. 5-cost, 7-power card, guys. On reveal, holy, this looks cool. Transform your other cards where you play her into random cards that cost 1 more. Yo, this is my kind of card right here. This is awesome. This is cool.
This is a cool card.
It's a cool design for sure. 5-cost, a little expensive, but the 7-power is not bad.
I don't mind the 5-cost because you have to have turns to put stuff in the locations, right?
Yeah.
You've got to have a chance to fill the board a little bit. And you know what's great about this too? Is I think it's very lore fitting. I think this is great for the character as a whole too, right?
Yeah.
The transformation element. Yeah. I think they nailed it. In terms of power levels, I'm not sure if this is good or not. Probably.
I think it's good. I think this is a classic. This reminds me of Pixie, who, by the way, I'm seeing people start to put Pixie in their decks. Would you imagine that? It's actually not a terrible card. I think this has some possibility. It has a lot of cool play lines. Like, listen, Tarn's 5 or 4, whatever that location. One of my favorites, right? What cards
That's a hot take. Oh, my God.
Oh, I love that location. I love
What?
Oh, I love the content. Oh, it's so fun. Oh, I love the content. I'm telling you, it's just a great location of chaos. Like, people change it on me, and I'm like, I was looking forward to it. But what I'll say is that I think this rewards cards that do well in there. So, for instance, White Tiger is a great play. Dr. Doom won't work because you can't go up one. But White Tiger, think about that. You play White Tiger, jumps, it pushes a tiger out. You could play on turn 6 and play that on the same lane, and it puts White Tiger up to a 6-cost card, right?
Yeah, so you get Null for free.
You get Null for free. You get this
Destroyer for free.
Yeah, you get that. Yeah, sure, Blob when you don't want it. But no, so I think that's kind of cool. To your point, Brood is 3-3 cost? True. Is that 3-4 cost? It'll pump out?
I guess, yeah. The question is, will they properly on reveal?
Oh, probably. Transforming it into random cards. Oh, well, dude, it's actually double-edged coin. It's like sometimes you want that, sometimes you don't, because in the Destroyer, you're like, you know, you're fine with it if it doesn't. I think it does proc it, though. I think that's how they balance it out. I feel like Jubilee would love this card because you play Jubilee. It's already a 4. You're hoping to get something down that helps out that's even higher, potentially, like a 5. Or it's her, and she makes Jubilee go up to a 5, and then you just got the free 7. I think she's got a lot of cool play lines.
It's a cool card for sure. Like I do like the text. I think it's a really inventive effect. Can't wait to play it. I think it's going to be cool. Whether or not it's like powerful, I think it's fair, because I think there's ways to troll yourself, but I think it's definitely a cool card. Like, I can't wait to play it.
I was just thinking Sentry as well. The Void.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of cool. There's a lot of ways to deal with the Void now, but that's just
you can change the Void, though.
Yeah,
you can play Cersei on top of the Void.
Up to a 5. Yeah, dude. I think
you absorbing man Cersei.
I think there's going to be specific deck builds that can work here with this card. I'm excited to see how she turns out. All right, we got a couple more, buddy. I think exactly 2 more. Oh, man. We might as well go to this beauty. Now, this is a card that I had to read a couple times to ensure that I was reading it correctly. Arishem. It's Arishem.
I'm not sure.
I think it's Arishem. I'm
trying to remember how they said it in the movie. You're saying it wrong, but I don't remember the right way.
I'm definitely saying it wrong. It come get me. Arishem is what I'm going to go with. Guys, this is where it's at, man. This is the next game mode in Marvel Snap. It's just me playing this over and over. I'll probably come back to streaming with this thing again. Come back again, by the way. Our first 7-cost card in the game, I think. Yes, correct. 7-power. At the start of the game, folks, he's going to give you +1 max energy. You got an Electro to start the game, but he's going to shuffle 12 random cards into your deck. It's actually worse in District X because it's adding those cards to the deck and not just replacing it. Whoa. What do you think about this one? Dude, this screams fun. Oh my God.
So it's basically a 24 card deck, right? When half of it's random. My question would be, is that do you draw first? No, it would have to happen prior to the draw. So something like a Quinjet, like if it was, so it's basically going to fill your deck with garbage, then draw, which makes the Quinjet almost so unlikely to ever possibly get.
Bro, from playing a lot of...
I don't know. I think it's a super cool card. I don't know if it's good, though, but it is the one extra energy.
I don't think it's going to be, let's say, like a tournament competitive, they're playing him card. But, dude, you can win with this thing for sure. Bro, think about their OTAs, man. There's not an awful ton of cards left that just suck. That just suck. They're horrible. Now, curve, and there's a lot of other issues here. But you also have your cards potentially layered in there, right? God, if you play Thanos, is that 30? That's so many. If they left Blob in his old state, dude, he'd be literally a million power. But, dude, the plus one energy and having that every single turn, no matter what, is really cool. Your opponent's got no idea. They're lost. They're going to have no idea what to expect. Conquest, love them. You're going to be... This is... I don't give a crap. This is a garbage card. This baby will be gold background by day one, man. I love him. I think he's going to be a good time.
You want a hot take?
Hit me.
This card, I'm going to call him Arishem.
Okay.
Arishem works perfectly with Uatu the Watcher because if Uatu gets pumped into the deck at the 24th slot, you don't care because now you're just drawing a whole bunch of other stuff with extra energy and you know what that third location is. And you're like, oh, that third location, it's Nova Roma. How could I? Oh, I can't do it. Never mind. Uatu sucks.
Even better though, you could get two Uatus if you put one in your deck.
Imagine having two Uatu reveals the middle location. That's the key. You snap on that, right?
Yo, there's going to be a game. Someone's like, oh, I lost. And the random Mbaku comes flying from the deck to win with sweet justice. I don't know, dude. I feel like with like Quinjet, which I know it can be tough to get him, but with Quinjet, Loki potentially, Mockingbird, good God, there's going to be a shell of the 12 you play with him that aren't synergized really, but they are. I think it has the opportunity to be good.
The challenge here is going to be card draw. Like you want to draw through cards if this is what it's doing. And if you still just start with the standard hand, you're just going to have guard. It's like, oh, I got Crossbones and Blob and whatever the hell it gave you. And you're like, you can't play into your hand, right? So I think that I don't know if this is its final form, but I'm interested.
Most definitely. I love it. This is probably my favorite card that we've read so far. We only have one more left here. And God, it's another name. I have no idea how to say it. Is it, I'm going to give it Fastos?
I'd have gone with Fastos.
Fastos? It's not Toss. It's Fastos.
Atos?
What about Fat Toes? Either way, man, this guy is... If Thor met Luke Cage, I love to see it. 3-cost, 3-power card. On reveal, give each card in your deck -1 cost. Ooh. Or +2 power. Hold up. This is kind of cool. I already know a couple synergies. This is a fun one. Hold up. I don't think I mind... I mean, obviously the -1 cost is killer, but the +2 power, this goes with the Gilgamesh right off the bat. You don't mind Gilgamesh because he just works with the deck. The -1 cost, though, is huge.
It is. It's like a Sarah Surfer card where you don't have to run Sarah anymore. So you can just run Gilgamesh then. Look at that. Yo. But then you'd have to like, oh, wait, hold on. Listen to me here. Watch. You play Piastos on turn 3 and then you play Absorbing Man and you give him the other effect. So you get both. So you do -1 cost and +2 power, or you would do it +2 power, -1 cost or whatever. I don't know which one's better, but you can do both at once.
And it could alternate and do it multiple times. So you could get -1 cost, and then plus, like, I think it could do like some cards get some and some get the other, I think. Right.
I read this as if you'd pick.
No, you don't pick.
Like I'm reading this as in like you play the card and you get to choose whether or not it gets +1.
If you could do that, this card would be the business. I don't think you could do that. I think it's going to be like your Iron Man gets minus a cost, your Dracula gets +2 power.
You think it's just random, one of randomized. The two effects.
That's what I think personally. If it's not, sign me up. But I think like playing him into a Wong would be really cool, right? Because you could just do it or to your point, Absorbing Man, you just double trigger it and you just get a lot of discount or value. What I was thinking of, man, this card's not even out yet, man, but I'm so hyper obsessed with it, is Valentina. She's a 2-cost card that gives you, I believe she's 2, right? She gives you 2 6-cost with -2 power and negative to cost. You could play him right after that and give those cards their power right back, pretty much, and then you could hit minus at a cost even more.
You want to hear some like medical grade hopium?
Hit me.
Fastos on turn 3, Absorbing Man turn 4, Adam Warlock turn 5, so you can draw more cards that have this effect.
That is
medical grade hopium.
Oh my god, no, I love it. I think this is you figured out the meta. I mean, dude, even with Brood and Surfer, I think that's where he's going to be probably the most, but this is definitely, there's a lot of that. That's all the cards, by the way, guys. There's a lot of content cards in here. I don't know how good they are. Listen, dude, we saw every card in the last patch get +1/+2. One card's not even the same. Red Guardians change. So this is definitely not their final form. I think we could see that. But they're fun. They're definitely a fun set of the bunch, man. What do you think was the best one out of all of them?
I tend to think that of like power level, I think Thena's probably going to be dirty. Like I can see Thena being very, very good. Gilgamesh feels a little strange. I think Fastos looks like probably... like, I don't see universally how that could be bad. I feel like Fastos has got to be good.
All right, man. I love to see it. It'll be exciting when those come out in a couple months.
Cozy, you picked the right time to get on a boat and ship yourself away from Marvel Snap during what was one of the buggiest and worst launches in Snap's new card history. Not only because, let's just say, US Agent did not necessarily take the meta by storm, but literally you couldn't even get him if you tried, if you really wanted him. So, Cozy, what was your experience with US Agent right off the top?
And dude, it was like when I was, anyone who's watched Community, there's the famous Childish Gambino scene where he walks in the door and he's got the pizza and everything's like on fire. I was like, I'm going to just take a second to check the Marvel Snap Twitter, see how everything's going. It was just nonsense, man. People were losing it more so than X Show because they're usually always losing it. But yeah, it was a good week to miss. My video yesterday, I think I did his recap in less than 3 seconds. I said one star, one star, one star. And then the adjustment category was he's going to get adjusted probably. So yeah, man, I picked a good week to miss, man. How was testing him live? How was that?
Well, it was a lot of fun because I had to keep using like spotlight keys to get him. And then I got him and I was like, okay, I did it. I got the card I really don't even want, but I got him. And then I started playing him. And I got to be honest with you, like he won a couple games where like, I was like, huh, look at that. It actually did a thing, but it was so awkward to play and you really had to play him late. Like playing him on 2 felt awkward and like you never want to play him on 2. And then like I was trying to play him with Goose and all these different ways. And there was no deck that really felt good with him at all. Like I'm not going to be throwing any deck up on the screen because I don't think you should be playing this card. Like if you care about your rank, if you care about like actually winning games of Marvel Snap, this card's just, it's just not good enough. I'm sorry. Yeah. And it's okay. We're allowed to have some of these misses, but I had this thought, Cozy. Okay. So there was a point in time, like 4 days where you literally could not get this card. You couldn't get it because the spotlight keys were taken off the store. Can you imagine if that had happened during the Red Hulk release and like half the people got Red Hulk and it was going absolutely bonkers and half of the people couldn't even get it? Can you imagine how absolutely destructive that would have been if this was Red Hulk and not US Agent, a completely irrelevant card ultimately?
I would have told the captain of the cruise ship, like, hey, can we just extend this puppy another week or so? Because I don't want to come back to whatever mess that would have been. Yeah, this happened to the right card. Everything happened to the right circumstance here. And I just love that one of the worst cards to be released got its own day, like because the patch got pushed. So like it was just all about either the bugs or US Agent. Yeah, man, just, I mean, we did our best to really try to make sense where you could possibly use them and this, that, the other. I think we just talked about this with Red Guardian. He does have a couple dials that you can, you know, tweak, if you will. But yeah, right now, isn't exactly good. But as I said in my video, man, 15 OTAs later, you better watch out. You better watch out. He's going to be killer.
I think they're committed to making new card releases good. Like we saw with Hercules, like the idea that like, hey, we're not scared to make this card better. If they make it a 2/4, I'm listening, right? 2/4. Okay. I feel like even if like you don't hit anything, it's still good stats, right? But like, listen, 1.9% of the meta, like the community has spoken. And yes, they couldn't buy the card for most of the week, but 1.9% of the meta, Red Hulk was over what, 29%, almost 30%. Cube rate barely positive by like just a sliver, and the card is just underperforming, and it's kind of what to be expected. And there was this hope that maybe even like with like Sarah Control that it could have a possible spot, but like that deck is just not competing very well against like the discard that's really popping off right now and some other archetypes that are really propelling itself like in the meta. Like it just does not, it doesn't have a spot. Like it feels very awkward. It does destroy Tribunal, however, but I'm seeing less Tribunal.
Right. And you, yeah, when you're hoping for your one card that you might draw, go against a deck that you might go against, like it is one of those, like if you play Tribunal and, you know, Conquest, you're like, all right, I've got this guy's number. But yeah, it's just a little underwhelming. There were circumstances. I think I was going up against a Hela that was just popping up all these cards, and I won by one because he pushed out all the negatives on like a full lane. But it was very few and far between. But yeah, I feel good about missing this week. I can't remember. I mean, Martyr was obviously trash, but we haven't had a lot of weeks where it was just like we will forget about him for a while. Havoc, it was like that for. I think Havoc is underplayed, but Havoc was. Was like that for a long time and Martyr as well. So yeah, poof, not great.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I actually like Havoc even to this day. Havoc, yeah. I think, is a card I enjoy playing. US Agent, I don't enjoy playing. And it's similar to Havoc in the sense that you don't play Havoc on turn two. Just like US Agent, you don't generally play on turn two. Now, that's part of what I think made it feel so bad. We were talking about on your side how like with Red Guardian, you can confidently play Red Guardian on three. I think people appreciate that flow of the game. And US Agent has this like this complexity of being beneficial later in the game, but like, do you really want to play a two power card on turn five or six? You kind of don't. And you even need your own like Luke Cage to some degree. Like you don't need it if you're playing a Gazoo deck or anything, but you kind of need it. I don't know, man. This card had awkward written all over it, and it's proven to be exactly awkward.
Dude, not to derail us, I just have to shout this out to the listeners and the viewers of the Snapchat. What I love, first of all, it sounds like The Undertaker and Coldstone Steve Austin's up above you right now. I feel like we could have fires around us. There could be a meteor that hits, and me and you would still just be locked in on the snap. It's just chaos. I've had my wife come in, kids cry, and we're just like, yeah. So US Agent, it's just chaos around it. It's hard to do, man, and I love it each and every week. We're two dads that just go. You know, we do this every week. Our wives know it by now, clearly, that we're doing this. And it's always fun just hearing the stuff in the background.
I know. Well, it's because like right now, I know exactly what's happening because I can hear it. One of my sons, he obviously got out of bed and he's running around up, like he's running. And my wife's like, you got to go back to bed. Stop. And he's like throwing a ball or something against the floor. So it's like my wife is chasing my son who crawled out of bed and won't go back to bed. He's 3 years old, and let's just say he has batitude, as I like to call it.
Batitude. I get just, dad, just slamming the door with his fist, and I know he's right there, and I'm just like, I can't do it. But anyway, I wanted to commend you for that. It always cracks me up.
We're good on one star. Like, I'm happy with one star here.
1.125, maybe, yeah.
1.125, so yeah. Now we're reaching new lows with Cozy's fractional
super
star
decimals now at this point. Yeah, I decided to. Every comment that people hate about it, I'm just going to keep adding a decimal to my next star rating.
And that brings us to our next point of conversation, which is the top 10 best cards in Marvel Snap. Now, what Cozy and I did is we took a look at all the cards. And we tried to see which ones were like, you know, archetype free. Ones that can go almost anywhere. Just the overall cards that in a vacuum are just the absolute god tier of Marvel Snap. We took a look at their win rates, their play rates, their cube rates. And we did our best to come up with our top 10. And we'd be interested in hearing your top 10 in the comments down below as well, because most certainly you're going to disagree with us. So let's get started with our honorable mentions. Cozy, there was some very hard cards to leave off of the top 10. I'll let you start.
Yeah. So it was a tough assignment because there was it couldn't be archetype specific. So things like Hela, right? It's like, how do you leave that off in top 10 right now in the meta that we're in? But if we're not looking at archetypes, yeah, obviously Hela's not the card you want in that guy we just covered that gives you random cards in your deck. Like, you don't necessarily want her with the other ones. So she was tough to leave off. I think she's obviously stupid good. There are others, though, that are right off the cusp. I think Thanos, we're kind of like, all right, he's kind of the master of being with random cards. But how has he evolved? And so we're letting that kind of marinate a bit more, yeah.
And even Thanos, like, you play Thanos not to play Thanos. You play Thanos right. For the stones and everything else. Like, Thanos himself is actually somewhat underwhelming, which is crazy. Like, when was the last time you saw 20-power Thanos drop on your board? Like, almost never, right? It's not even the goal of the deck, which is kind of crazy. But another one worth mentioning here is just outside the top 10 for us was Ms. Marvel. Ms. Marvel, I think, I still believe is an absolutely tremendous card, but with the changes to the conditions, far less play, much more easy to disrupt. Just seeing a lot less Ms. Marvel out there.
I think she's underplayed as all hell. If you're playing Doctor Doom in a deck, just slot her in there with it. Like, I would say Iron Lad, Miss Marvel, and Doom is such a great little pairing that I just love to have in a lot of my decks, and really just a strong card at that. Tough to leave her off as well.
Yeah, and other examples of cards that are just honorable mentions for us that, you know, could have made the list in another day and another time. Iron Man, one of the best starter cards in Marvel Snap's history, if not the best. Angela, the newly buffed Angela, absolutely love Angela, getting that +2, but just a hair outside of our top 10. And literally at number 11, which we had, was Mockingbird. And I do think that, you know, Mockingbird, some of the hesitation is its dependence on Thanos, but I think in other archetypes, it is an absolutely a beautiful card. Just not enough to crack our top 10.
Yeah, still your line. If we remade the list, I'm sure we'd do it different like 10 other times each time, right? So definitely fun. Let's kick it off with number 10.
Number 10, my man, is one of your favorite cards in Marvel Snap. A card that you called out, and it's very released saying this card is going to be legit, and it is Iron Lad. Iron Lad has continued to be one of the top cards in Marvel Snap for its versatility, its fair power level, but most importantly, that opportunity on turn 6 to reach into that deck and pull the card you need, whether that be like the Hela, the aforementioned Hela, the Tribunal that's sitting in your shell as the last card you didn't draw. Whatever it happens to be, Iron Lad is key. Hitting something like a Iron Man with the Iron Lad stat line is remarkable. It's been a truly fantastic card and one that's irreplaceable in any deck that it's in.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite cards in the game. I think it's still tremendous that he's 4-6. Crazy. The thing that stands out with him, if you look at him compared to some cards that have been released, he's just great on turn 6, and that's kind of rare. You don't get that a ton. The 6 power is beautiful, and again, he just is literally synergizing with every card in the game, which is awesome.
The thing about him with turn 6 is, like, if you compare him to, like, White Queen, what do you do? Like, when you play White Queen on turn 6, you're like, cool, I got 6 power. With Iron Lad, you're actually proccing the effect that's in your deck. You play it later, you have a greater chance to hit the card that you're intending to hit, right? So because you've drawn through your deck, you have a better understanding of what's left, right? Yeah. When you play him on turn 4 or 3, if you have Zabu out, or if Zabu was played, I should say, you know, you're hitting a much larger set of cards. But on turn 6, that's thinned down, so Iron Lad's much more reliable. And your opponent, in a snapping condition, can't actually expect you to Iron Lad and hit a Doctor Doom. Like, they can't prepare for that the way you can prepare for it with your deck list or your untapped or whatever, right? So I do like the call. Very good card coming in at number 10 for us, Cozy. Number 9. Now, this is one of my favorite cards in the game, and we actually mentioned her on your side as a card that's kind of not very popular in the MCU or in the comics, but one of the absolute best in the game, and that is Sarah coming in at number 9. Sarah has been a card that has been, like, literally one of the best cards in Marvel Snap for the longest time. Used to be a 5-5. The only nerf it's ever sustained is going down to a 5-4, making all your cards go down by one cost. A truly powerful, powerful ability, Cozy.
Yeah, I mean, she had her time out of the sun for like a hot minute. Sarah control wasn't exactly there, but people then would play her in Tribunal, or they would play her in a number of other decks. Listen, Mobius does exist. He's out there, but not enough. Not enough. Sarah, very good card, and one of the definitions of universal.
And the fact that Mobius and Mobius exists makes it feel fair that Sarah exists the way she does, right? Because, like, before, when Sarah was a 5-5, she was being included everywhere. Sarah controls, like, the number one deck in the game, and it felt like there was no real contenders. It was difficult because you just play Sarah on 5 and essentially just outburst your opponent, who also played Sarah on 5. Mobius gives it, like, a little bit of that counterplay that I think is important. But the key thing is Mobius coming down on turn 3 or 4 lets you hold Sarah in hand and play your hand out differently. Mobius coming down on turn 5 is actually pretty damning if you're playing in Conquest, but then again, you should be knowing not to play your Sarah anyways. So anyways, pretty interesting card. I love it. And I mean, there's nothing more fun in a card game than playing more cards in a given turn. That's what Sarah allows you to do. Going in at number 8, Cozy, this is one of your favorite cards as well. And another one that you said, like, you actually, it's funny, when it first came out, everyone was like, this looks like it's going to be a fun card. We're not sure how powerful it's going to be. We said it. Everyone said it. Oh, it looks like a fun card. Loki looks like it's going to be a fun card. Do you guys remember when Loki was a 3-5? Do you guys remember those days?
Oh my God, disgust. It's just so, I mean, I try to erase them alongside the Eliath release and Mobius. That whole month,
I know, eh?
That whole month was a hellhole.
And it was funny because, like, Loki came out as a 3-5. and it was clearly the best, one of the best season pass cards ever released. And like so much copium was like being just huffed because like you had Collector getting hit. Everything on the periphery was getting hit, but Loki's like, I'm the season pass card. I got plot armor. Like Loki was untouched. And then the season rolls over and then Loki gets finally nerfed. And I actually think he's in a good spot right now. Loki feels very fair. The effect is still very powerful. Mobius and Mobius does impact Loki very significantly, but there's no question. There's no question about it. Getting your opponent's cards at a negative cost gives you a massive advantage.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of Shuri, where she was like the villain for a long time. And then there was that great rest period. And now it's like, ah, yeah, sure. That's a fun deck. Loki, we're getting closer there. She's the skill too. Like he rewards skill, which I like as well. Definitely just in a good spot. And I hope they don't do much to tweak it. I think he's kind of good where he's at.
He feels like the kind of card that is deceptively difficult to play. You would think that like, oh, you just play Loki out and you get their card and you just slam them down like blind and like, oh, you can win because you just outpower. I don't think it's that simple. I think that there's multiple skill levels here. When to play Loki, when not to play Loki, because Loki decks are currently being built with like a specific out as well. Where like you don't even play Loki. You can play the other category of cards, your shield style cards that give you an advantage there. But ultimately, I do like the versatility that Loki provides. And the decks have been performing pretty well. They're not quite, well, they're not even close to what they were at peak launch, but still very, very strong. So that's Loki coming in at number 8. Number 7 is a card that I'm very happy that we included because I think it's one of the silent winners of Marvel Snap. The card that if you draw it and you it's turn 5, you're like, hell yeah, I'm going to play this card. It never feels bad. And that is Vision.
Yeah.
Vision has been one of those cards that's probably one of the most slept on in Snap from a standpoint of like just not respecting how much it actually does. The ultimate versatile card, a 5/8 cozy that can move every single turn wherever you want it to go. It's an absolute beauty.
Yeah, one of the early Snapchats, shout out to you guys that have been listening now for weeks on in, but we talked about like slept on cards and I think Vision was amongst the top. I know he's on my thumbnail for a reason. Because of that, the just tricking your opponent has so much power behind it and the deception and the power behind him now. You know, we just talked about Red Guardian. Can't stop Vision because they have no idea if you're gonna, you know, stay there or not. I don't know. It's just a very long lasting good card. Luckily, it's had things like Angela and other things like Hope Summers come out that make it even better. But yeah, Vision is, it's crazy to see him on this list, but he deserves it.
It's also important to note that Vision did get buffed from a 5/7 to a 5/8, which I think improved it quite a bit. And still going back to that, I think it was like our second Snapchat ever, Cozy. I still remember you saying it. Your favorite play was the mind game of not moving Vision on turn 6. Like not even moving the Vision. And to this day, I still do that. I will still just leave Vision where he is as like just a mind game. And so it wins. It wins a lot of the time. And Vision is an absolutely remarkable card coming in at number 7. Number 6. Now this is, I mean, listen, I believe this card was on our what's the mountain in the United States with all the faces on it?
Moonstone? Rushmore? Did you say Mount Moonstone? Like that Clefairy, like Pokemon?
Oh my gosh, did I actually say Mount Moonstone from Pokemon?
It is Mount Moonstone. You're correct. Rushmore's the one in Pokemon.
Okay, so it's Mount Moonstone?
Yeah, they just
have pictures of Clefairy and Clefable
Jigglypuff. Wigglytuff, Jiggly. Oh yeah, for sure.
This was Magneto, and it's actually a 15% of the meta right now. Magneto is having this massive, massive comeback. And I mean, listen, this card has not been changed at all since beta. It has been one of the ones that has remained exactly as it is. And it's so good. This is a card that honestly, it feels like it can go in any deck. I feel like it could even go up on this list, but we have an absolute banger top 5. So to see Magneto at 6, like you got to know that like, listen, this card, it's one of my favorite in the game. Its disruption capability is truly remarkable. And X-Men 27, X-Men 97, there's some stuff happening there too.
Oh yeah, for sure. He is the perfect card. Like still one of my favorite plays is knowing you're going to lose the lane with him, but you know, you're just like, you're taking everything and they just have no idea. There's so many good freaking 3-cost, 4-cost. He might take a small dive with Zabu leaving and maybe 4-cost or a little less played. But there's still so many good 4s and 3s that he's going to kind of stay that way for a very long time.
Still, honestly, one of my favorite plays with him is pulling Venom. Like, not even for the Arnim Zola play. Just pulling Venom out of the lane.
Yeah.
And like, hey, I know you're going to play their death here or whatever. And like Venom, and they just overpower a lane by like 80 power or whatever.
Yeah.
It's great.
I love this. I love playing him with Storm. I think it's so fun that they panic. They play something on the Storm lane. And you're just like, cool. Like, it doesn't matter. You're going to take it out.
Bringing that Crossbones over here.
Yeah, exactly. So just a fun card, perfectly designed. Can't agree more.
Yeah, absolutely. And that comes in at 6. So now we're into our top 5. Now, Cozy and I, we debated over this top 5. And honestly, if we were to debate again, which we're doing right now, we could even potentially shift a couple things around here and there, because it is so hard to pick a top 5 in Marvel Snap, especially when you're trying to be like, you know, not as archetype specific, because like, as Cozy mentioned before, like something like a Venom is very specific to Destroy, but maybe not as good as a whole. And then that takes us to our number 5 card, which is very niche. It comes in a 3-card package, but that package makes every deck better, and it's Annihilus. Annihilus, Hood, Sentry has become just synonymous with success, synonymous with cube stealing, and Annihilus is at its heart. When we talked about Annihilus all those months back, we gave it a 5-star rating. The week that Annihilus came out, people were like, oh, this card, man, you're too easy to counter, because everyone was playing Annihilus, everyone was preparing counters for it. And then now after the meta has settled, when you pull out your Annihilus deck and you're playing the Sentry down, and it is too good. This card is awesome, easily in our top 5.
Yeah, I think he's a perfect example of just like how you make a great card and how you handle a nerf of a card and make him still work. Like, what I like is he's not just this power stick. Like, he's this perfect combo-centric card that instills fear into your opponent. Like, do they have him? But they have to play like you do as well. Yeah, I think he's great on power. We talked about it. He's kind of, you know, rose up. It was funny. My brother asked me, like, hey, you know, I'm only missing a couple cards. I'm thinking of getting, I think it was Cold Obsidian. And I was like, okay, yeah. Do you have Annihilus? He's like, no. I'm like, okay, we're done talking. It's Annihilus. Yeah. Get Annihilus, no question. So I think we can back up what we said last week. The Hood, Sentry, Annihilus. That's what you got to play. Solid.
It's honestly, it's one of the best cards released in the last 12 months in Marvel Snap. And that's saying a lot, because our number 4 card is a card that we'll say came out a little more recently. Cozy, you went as far as to say that in your title, in the video, you're like, this card is a problem.
Yeah.
It's big. It's red. And it's getting to astronomical sizes. And look at those hands capable of cheek clapping. Cozy, it's Red Hulk.
A lot of these, I think we could, you know, put cards in any of these slots and mix up the order, because this guy could be number 1 too. I mean, the fact of the matter is he's the definition of put him in any deck. I mean, go look at, I just did Decks on the Rise. I know you always do your best decks of the week. I'm sure a good chunk of those had Red Hulk in play. And so much so that like, I now make decks and I'm like, okay, I could do Red Hulk here. I know the stats will be better. I'm not going to. I'm going to try this route instead. Does he last? Does he last? But it doesn't matter, because right now he's definitely deserving the spot.
Yeah, he's absolutely massive. And he has tons of dials here that the development team can work with a little bit. And one thing that really bothers me about Red Hulk, like, it's been bothering me. I don't know how to explain it. I hate his haircut in this variant. And I know that seems really stupid, but every time someone plays him with this variant, it actually pisses me off. Like, why would Red Hulk be groomed that way? Like, it kind of doesn't make sense. Like, am I completely out, like, on left field here, or is this haircut stupid?
The mustache has to go somewhere when he loses it each time. But yeah, no, I guess he went to the barber and he's like, give me the tree stump. I'm looking for the tree stump just right across the right across the top there, you know, and make it flat. Yeah, what do you want him to have, man? Like an afro? Like, what are you looking for?
I don't know, man. I'm not actually sure. I think he'd look good with like kind of like shagadelic long hair down to his shoulders.
Dude, that would be more menacing. I'd be pooping my pants. I mean, I would already be with Red Hulk, but yeah, I don't know if I hate it. I think he'd just look better with a mustache.
Also, his kneecap looks like a boulder.
It is a boulder.
Red Hulk does not skip leg day. And that takes us to number 3, Cozy. And we've had a couple absolute banger cards coming out, because this was last month's season pass card. It's Hope Summers coming in the top 3. And you know what? This is way higher than anyone would have expected. We knew this card was going to be good. And even in the original data mines, I remember we did a little thing we were talking about. Didn't Hope give +2 at the time?
Yeah, I think
plus
so.
+2 energy bonkers at the time on the original data mine?
Yeah, we read it and we're like, I think this was when we were reading cards like we did today, when we like a couple months in advance. We looked at her 2 months back and I remember reading her and we were like, oh, that's not going to happen. No, yeah, there's no way on that one. Like, we know that's. And so I think Glenn and the team just wanted like a fun time testing or something in the office for a little bit. But yeah, Hope Summers, what really identified her as being crazy is when I was doing Corvus Glaive the month prior. And I was like, man, in discard, Corvus is awesome because he's already doing what you want to do. We've talked about this before, but Hope Summers is always doing what you want to do. Like, you're fine playing into her lane. She's just magnificent at what she does. I mean, there's another card that gives plus one energy each round, max energy, that we talked about today. And it gives 12 random effing cards to your deck. Like, there's just not a lot you have to do here. And what's crazy is she could go to 3-3 and she's still fine.
Yeah, well, think about what, like, Electro is. Electro's downside is basically the Sandman effect for yourself for one extra energy.
Yeah.
Hope Summers just comes on the board. And you could, like, play multiple cards into Hope, right? Like, it is so good. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets brought down slightly. It is running currently at 30% of the meta, which is a lot. That's a lot. One in three games, essentially. I mean, one in three games is 33.33, repeating, of course.
That's 32 more percentage than our boy US agent. So yeah, being played a bit,
exactly.
Being played a bit more. Yeah, crazy good card. What's that number two?
Number two? I mean, Cozy, this is one of those cards that I feel like I can talk about nonstop. It's had a million now different kind of spotlight variants come out, and each one of them as cute as the last. And it's Jeff the Baby Landshark. First of all, those comics, very easy to read because there's almost no words in them. I just look at the pictures. It's like Pictionary with Jeff the Shark in it. And honestly, Jeff is just good. I was kind of concerned that War Machine was kind of eat Jeff's lunch, as I say, like every podcast. It has not ultimately played like that. Jeff remains one of the most ultimate versatile cards in Marvel Snap. 2-3 power line that can literally go anywhere, be played at any time, to any location. Ultimate versatility, one of the ultimate cards in the game.
I just think two costs is my favorite cost, right? Just because it's like, if they bring value at two, I love them. And like, that's why Angela's so loved. And I mean, we could Cable. Like, there's so many cards that you just play them. They feel good. They do the job. They do great. And Jeff's part of it. And he just gets you out of every sticky situation. I'll never forget when there's so many people. Oh, he's just a little better than Nightcrawler.
I think he's way better than Nightcrawler. Like, that's not even up for discussion, but I understand what you're saying. Like, originally people were like, oh, it's just basically a Nightcrawler that can go into, I don't know, Professor X locations. I'm like, no, it's more than that.
My sweet child.
Definitely more than that. So Jeff definitely coming in at number two here. And once again, another card, it's running 31% of the meta, but I don't feel like it's a problem. Like, I don't think like Jeff at 31% of the meta is as bad as like Hope at 30% of the meta. It's just one of those things where like, maybe you just got to bring the lineup on two costs. Like, I don't know if you nerf Jeff to a 2-2. Like, I don't think that's the answer here. I don't think I've ever seen anyone complain about Jeff the Baby Landshark.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think he's fine. I think he's fine with what he said. I think it's interesting that him and Vision, though, are both on this list, and they both do kind of, not the same thing, but kind of, you know? Like, they both just have that, where are they going? Oh, they can go to, you know, hard-to-reach locations. They can change their mind. There's so much working for it, and that's what makes it great.
Very notable that, you know, Jeff the Baby Landshark at 31% of the meta, Vision at 16. So Vision approximately half the meta popularity of Jeff the Baby Landshark. And that takes us to number one. And number one, this is going to be a controversial pick. Very controversial, because some people see this as a menace to Marvel Snap. Some people see it as a necessary evil. But it is one of the highest, if not the highest, cube rate card in Marvel Snap on any given day. And it's Shang-Chi. I mean, there's so much to say about this card. I remember there was a tournament I was in where we all got to ban a card. I banned Shang-Chi, and it turned the tournament into shambles because we were like, this card is too important. Everyone's just going to play these ongoing, like, Devil Dino decks and all this crazy. Like, there's just too much verticality. You can't ban Shang-Chi. And I did, and it was disastrous. At the same time, half the people I speak to want to delete this card from the game. It got nerfed to only having a 10 power effect. It's just such a complex card. I personally see it as a necessary evil, a card that like is almost a requirement in so many decks, which is not necessarily a good thing for Marvel Snap as a whole. But I would be interested in your thoughts, Cozy, because I do think that cube rate and everything, this is one of the absolute, if not, it is the best card in the game. But is that a good thing?
I think it's two different questions, like how I feel about him and is it a good thing at his current stat line? I mean, I know the stat lines don't represent post-Zabu that much, right? So that was an indirect way to really hurt him. Because the thing is, playing him alongside something like a Cole Obsidian was stupid. And the reason why is because you just completely kill their lane that they were winning. You win. And then you usually could win the other that you've already built up, whatever you've done. And that's why it's so problematic. I am fine with him in the game. It's been long enough. It's like Genji and Overwatch. Like he's in the game. Like he definitely is not something that I think should be deleted from the game. He exists. You know he exists. If you play a lot of big cards, that's kind of the price you pay. You got to put in armor. You got to put in Kyra. Those are, you know, for a reason. I don't like his play rate, obviously. I think they need to figure out how it's almost like they need to do a tech card analysis, right? And just kind of be like, all right, where's Cosmo at? Where's Shadow King at? And continue to strive to get that closer. Because, right, like, we like Red Guardian because, you know, he feels like he can answer more. But I just don't love that he is just, like, far and away the best tech card. I've seen, like, oh, he destroys both sides. That's stupid. I think I'm sorry if you think that's a good idea. Great. I just personally don't agree with that. I don't hate him. I think he's a necessary. What I don't love is anytime, you know, I make a deck and I'm just like, Shang-Chi should be in here. Or like I make a deck and then the video comes out and my same deck's there, but Shang-Chi's in there and it's a better deck. Like, of course it is. Like, yeah, of course the win rate's going to go up on that deck. But yeah, I don't know. I just kind of, at this point, it's been 2 years. I've settled with it. I want to see how Zabu affects it though.
Yeah, so our current stats, like as of recording, have a very limited data set with the Zabu change, right? So we'll have to see how that impacts the card going forward. Even without Zabu, though, like there are, like, you just win lanes on turn six with Shang-Chi. It's just like, it just does that, right? But you are correct that the Zabu change is a significant change here. What I will say as well, though, is it's running a 36% meta share as of recording. And I'm hoping that comes down. It has to come down with the Zabu change. And I think it needs to. But at the same time, what you said was correct. As people that, like you and I, we make tons of decks and, you know, we do our best to make the best competitive decks as possible. And it feels like oftentimes Shang-Chi feels like a requirement where you're giving up some deck synergy or some fun to play this tech card that you know is better. A good example was my new Groove deck. I was playing Nightcrawler in it and it was doing very well. And the win rate actually went slightly down with Shang-Chi in that deck, but the cube rate went up. So ultimately, Shang-Chi taking out Nightcrawler, adding it to like a move-style deck, just made the deck better and made you rank faster. And just because you have that ability to punch something out, there's no Zabu in that deck. It's still just a 4-3 that punches out the biggest card in there on the board for them. And so ultimately, like, I think that this card is absolutely remarkably powerful, frustrating, but I still think that you approach every game of Marvel Snap assuming your opponent is capable of playing Shang-Chi, because they most certainly are. And Cozy, that takes us to the Snapchat mailbag. If you have any questions you'd like to ask Cozy and I, whether they're about Marvel Snap or just life in general, we actually really like the life in general questions too. Hit us with them down below. We'll get to as many as we can every single week. That being said, we're getting started with question number one from Gunzerker. And it reads, it seems like we have more counter cards to counter certain effects. Do you think we will see a card that where you keep your opponent from gaining more energy? If so, what kind of drawback or ramifications would this card need to have to not be overpowered?
I think we might see one that doesn't stop that. I don't know if it's going to stop that ability from happening, but kind of like Red Hulk, you know, Red Hulk gets power by then not doing the energy. So if they have plus energy, maybe, you know, you get something from that. And what's cool is there's a lot of locations like, you know, Superflow and Black Hat. Like there's a ton in there that could also help the card out. Don't know how they would stat it. I just don't know if they'll like Mobius that effect though.
Yeah, my original impression of this question was like, I can see why you'd want that effect in the game. But at the same time, like, I don't think that's that strong. Like it is, but like you kind of do that with Red Hulk, as you mentioned. Like you punish them with Red Hulk by having them float that energy. But this is, I think, what they're referring to is something like an Electro. Electro giving them that ramp effect. How do you punish that ramp effect?
And because of that new card that we just read today, that tells me they won't do it, because there's no way they put that in the game and then someone could just kill your, then what do you have at that point? It's like you're super dead, right?
Yeah, you're completely screwed and you can't even play that card, right? So a good point. I think it's an interesting idea, but I'm not sure what the implementation was. And the idea of having a ramification or drawback on that card, I don't even know if that effect's good enough to even warrant a drawback. Right. It's probably just a decent statted card with that effect. But hey, maybe one day, I know that'd probably be a 1 or 2 star card for me. Maybe, unless we get some significant changes. Maybe a Shiram, which I think we've said that name 12 different times this episode, we'll have something else to say about that. And that takes us to the next question, which is coming from JME. And it reads, what is the most consistent deck you use to climb the ladder? Also, what's the most consistent deck you use for Conquest?
Oh, that's always fun. I mean, Alex can answer the same, as we test out so many different things. I feel like, you know, Patriot is my go-to. I love the way the deck works. I love trying to find like the new Patriot deck that's working a bit smoother. Cards where I can play tech cards to gain massive cubes, like Supergiant, you know, like what we were talking about with Red Guardian today, Shadow King. So that I still play Sarah Control too. I enjoy that. I think Sarah Control is probably my go-to as far as that. Anytime I can play Cable, so I like Loki, those would be my answers.
Sarah Control, one of the few decks now that can confidently play Shang-Chi on turn 6 for 3 cost.
Yeah.
What I will also say is that like Sarah Control definitely comes out during the Conquest week as well on Infinity Conquest. For me, what I've been using to climb ladder, similar to what Cozy said, like the first couple days, it's Baron Zemo. The next day, it's Red Hulk. It's the stuff we're testing with. But when I'm just like laying in bed, you know, crying myself to sleep, and I'm just playing Marvel Snap, I'm honestly playing Silver Surfer. I've been playing just like the Nakia Okoye Sebastian Shaw Surfer with Skillmonger and Nova in it. I just love it. I can't stop playing that deck. Like, that's like my feel good comfort deck. And I just keep playing that. I don't care if the win rate's not as good as it used to be. I just want to play that. And I like it because I have Rogue in there and I'm swooping, stealing cards. I just like the deck. You know, there's just a comfort in playing a deck you just love so much. And I'm still waiting for a Godsplit on Silver Surfer. I've not yet hit one. So that is part of my incentive to keep pumping boosters into that deck. And that takes us to our next question coming from Dave Castle. And I included this because I think it's just so funny that this conversation still exists. You guys need to bring deck matchmaking to the table. So the debate whether or not deck matchmaking still exists still rages.
Dude, that and location batching will always be, and they'll always be. I mean, listen, there are the Illuminati. You got people that are always thinking there's something going on here. That the birds are what, cameras or whatever in the sky by the government. So it isn't a thing. I get it. I understand it. It's not, though.
A while ago, I brought it up to someone who was like a second dinner employee, and they kind of laughed and said, like, why? Like, why would we do that? Like, first of all, it'd be like a lot of work and actually difficult. And why? Like, what benefit do we have from doing that? Like, it's just one of those things that's so circumstantial that people are like, oh, you see, it happened. And it happened to me too, man. Like, I'll play Quicksilver, and then like the first game I queue, they're playing Agatha Quicksilver. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And it's pure coincidence, but like we just fixate so much on it. And the location batching, man, there are times when I don't know.
I have a toe in that one. I'm like, the amount of conquest where it's like a location I haven't seen in forever, dude. And it's on like four matches in a row. And it's really evident in like Infinity Conquest because there's a lot of like retreats and things. Listen, I might be a toe in that one still. And I don't think it's on purpose. I think it might just be a little spaghetti code, but I don't know.
And that brings us to our next question, which is from David, and it reads, I've got an idea for a new game mode and would love to hear what you think, called the Danger Room, which is literally just a practice mode where you finally get to play with cards you don't own, reverse turns, and play against specific archetypes all against bots. I've been playing this game since season one, and it's wild because I still don't have Galactus.
Yeah, practice mode, you can put right up there with the matchmaking question. Like, people have wanted practice mode for a while. I think Conquest inadvertently turned into that. I think we definitely need a mode that doesn't do anything that you could play cards that you don't have. I think there's no question. I'm fine with it. I definitely think we should have that in a lot of cases because it can help you like experiment with things and people that don't watch YouTube, you know, or watch content, like they can just see if they like the card. They need to introduce that in some way. I just don't know how high it is on the priority. I mean, I'm just waiting for some of the stuff on the roadmap still, so I don't know where that'll fall.
I would be surprised if you're ever able to play with cards you don't have in your collection. Like, I would be really surprised with that because I think that's a core component of the monetization system. Yeah. And like, I just don't ever see that. And I feel like the Proving Grounds is essentially your bot mode, so to speak, right? I mean, sometimes you get to play on ladder and it's bot mode. But actually this season, the bots have been like these crazy cheating bots, man. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, I did.
I've lost like multiple AQ games against bots. I'm like, what the hell kind of math was this? Like they got like, I'm talking like Jubilee God plays, which made no sense to beat me by 1 point. Like it's crazy how these bots have been playing. That's a whole other conversation. But I'm concerned with the idea of like playing with cards you don't have. I don't know if that ever happens. And I think that the Proving Grounds is being treated as the practice mode. But I do absolutely understand what you're saying. And I think that's great. And you see a lot of games do that. One thing I will mention, though, is if you want to play cards you don't own, you play Loki.
Yeah. Right?
Loki is a good way to do that exact thing. And we come back to it. I think I bring this up almost every single week. I still think that, like, instead of these 4U bundles, Loki bundle for new players. Anyways, like, you play these cards that you're interested in. Like, oh, I got their Red Hulk, and look how chonky he is. Okay. I want to get that Red Hulk now. It's a card I can confirm I enjoy. So I think, like, a better answer to this, which is probably more likely, is make low-key accessible to newer players. Now, it takes us to our last question of the week, and it comes from Jermathew, which I think I said the name right, and it reads, as time has gone on, do you think Cerebro is due for a rework? It seems like every month or two, there's a new location that makes it more difficult to play.
Ooh, yeah. Gone are the days, I feel like, a Cerebro being, like, super crazy, you know, like, oh, like, in the meta. How do you handle that, though? How do you handle that? Do you give it another plus to the cards out there? Like, because it all comes down, like we talked about, Snap comes down to risk versus reward. And right now, for more so, the risk of Cerebro is too high. Too high.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's, like, it's okay to have, like, a truly fun archetype in Snap. I had a thought about this when I picked this question out of the pile, and I was thinking to myself, do you imagine? This might be so broken. It might be so broken. But can you imagine if Cerebro had the Ebony Blade effect, where anything under the effect of Cerebro could not have its power reduced and it couldn't be destroyed?
I mean, sign me up. It's bold. We'll see.
It's bold, but tell me that's not crazy. Like, that's probably good, because that's the reason why you want, like, Luke Cage, and you force Luke Cage in all these decks. Make it so that it has that Ebony Blade effect. Just make it part of Cerebro.
That they can't be reduced? Yeah. Hey, done. Glenn, ship it.
And what's the worst that happens? Cerebro gets broken for 2 weeks? Who's going to cry about that? Actually, I should take that back. Everyone's going to cry about it.
Yeah, right. There's
a whole website called Twitter that's designed to complain about that. I just bait the entirety of Marvel Snap Twitter.
Yeah, here they come. In trouble. Here they come.
Anyways, guys, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Snapchat. As always, we appreciate you guys. Leave us a review, whatever it is that you would like to do to help support our content.
It was definitely a fun episode. We got another great week ahead, man. Thanks for joining us. As always, until the next one, happy snapping, guys.